Welcome to the Lundbeck Institute Campus Podcast. Lundbeck Institute Campus provides learning and teaching resources for psychiatrists, neurologists, and for healthcare professionals with a special interest in these areas.
Since sleep regulation involves many neurotransmitter systems and brain circuits, it is likely that the mechanisms generating normal sleep overlap with those that maintain mental health. This would explain why disturbed sleep and schizophrenia are so intimately linked. This was the essence of the seminar given at the Lundbeck Institute on 17 April 2015 by Russell Foster, director of the Sleep and Circadian Neuroscience Unit at the University of Oxford, UK. Sleep disturbance is common in serious mental illness, and schizophrenia is no exception. It is widely accepted that schizophrenia disrupts sleep and circadian rhythms. But it also seems that disturbances of sleep can precede severe mental illness and may even cause it. Sleep problems, common and important in psychosis. Sleep is less regular, may occur at any time of the day or night, and may be too much or too little. It can be hard to get sleep or stay asleep. Symptoms of fear or anxiety often affect sleep. A change in sleep may precede onset of psychosis or relapse. Sleep problems cause other major health problems, both physical and mental. Sleep and circadian abnormalities. In a landmark study, Foster and colleagues compared the sleep-wake activity and circadian rhythms of 20 outpatients with schizophrenia, median duration of illness 10 years, and 21 healthy controls over a period of 6 weeks. No patients and no controls were in paid employment. Despite the fact that patients were on newer antipsychotic medication and their symptoms relatively well controlled, sleep was of significantly poorer quality in patients than in controls and more fragmented. On average, patients with schizophrenia took 15 minutes more to fall asleep and slept 2 hours longer. Importantly for memory function, they showed less slow-wave sleep than controls, and this may be relevant to poorer formation and consolidation of memory. Compared with healthy subjects, patients had low levels of exposure to natural light, which may have impaired the settling of the internal clock, and the circadian melatonin rhythm in many was abnormal, suggesting lack of synchronization between the external cycle of day and night and the body's internal rhythm. Medication dose was not related to the extent of circadian abnormalities. The fact that the control group was not employed suggests that lack of structured work does not account for the different sleep patterns of people with schizophrenia. See our slideshow about sleep and circadian rhythm disruption in schizophrenia on our website by clicking the link in the show notes. A common etiology, common and overlapping brain pathways. Foster and colleagues presented a new concept of understanding the relationship between psychiatric illness and sleep and circadian rhythm disruption. A working hypothesis is that the abnormalities in neurotransmitter signaling and regulatory pathways that predispose to mental illness also cause disruption of sleep. A defect in neurotransmission that predisposes an individual to mental health problems may also cause some type of sleep disruption. The sleep disruption will almost certainly exacerbate or may even provide the final nudge into mental illness, and the mental illness will exacerbate the sleep disruption. Prior to this, sleep disruption in psychiatric illness was essentially dismissed as an artifact of medication or social isolation. There is early evidence that genes linked to schizophrenia in humans affect sleep and circadian rhythms in mice. An as-yet-unpublished study from the Oxford group suggests that a breakdown in the sleep-wake cycle is already evident in people at high risk of bipolar disorder who have not yet developed the disease.
Let's now drill into that neuroscience in a little bit more detail to give you some sense of what's going on. So here's the cortex, and it's being bathed during the wake state by the monoaminergic neurotransmitters, histamine, dopamine, noradrenaline, serotonin, and the cholinergic neurotransmitter, acetylcholine. And this is essentially as a result of activation of arousal pathways very much in the hindbrain and through the thalamus, basically feeding the cortex with neurotransmitters that drive the wake state. The wake state is actually partly, but very importantly, driven by a really tiny bit of the hypothalamus called the lateral hypothalamus. And the lateral hypothalamus projects to all of these structures in the hindbrain and thalamus. And a key way in which the lateral hypothalamus is regulating these arousal pathways, turning them on in effect, is via orexin or hypocretin. And of course it's defects in orexin hypocretin that have been associated with narcolepsy, that overpowering need to fall asleep. And the reason is you lack that drive onto the arousal pathways. Now whilst this whole thing is being turned on, a bit of the brain is being turned off, probably by monoaminergic neurotransmitters. We don't absolutely know about that. But there's active suppression of this structure here called the VELPO, and don't worry too much about the details, you can look up this later, but it's the ventrolateral preoptic nuclei. Really a small bit of the brain. And why it's so important though is because when the sleep drivers kick in, and we'll talk about those in a moment, one very importantly is adenosine. Now adenosine is the breakdown product of ATP, ATP being the currency, the energy currency of the body. So if you wanted a metric of activity, then the breakdown of ATP into adenosine is a very good marker of activity. And we know that adenosine is really important because it builds up in key areas in the brain during the wake state. And if you add adenosine to, if you put adenosine into the prefrontal cortex, you can put people to sleep. Coffee, who had a cup of coffee this morning? This is good, because what we've done is we've blocked the adenosine receptors, or we've partially blocked the adenosine receptors. We've reduced the sleep drive, and so we're all a bit more awake. So adenosine is actually really very important in driving the wake state. Caffeine really does work, but we'll talk a bit more about caffeine later on. So the sleep drivers kick in. They then inhibit the lateral hypothalamus. So that massive great column of neurotransmitter drive is gone. Not only does the VELPO, and it's just a tiny, you'd think it was this insignificant bit of the brain, turn that lot off via the lateral hypothalamus, it actively projects to and inhibits the release of neurotransmitters in these pathways. It turns all those systems off during non-REM sleep, but interestingly enough, during REM sleep, it actually turns acetylcholine on. And acetylcholine is at levels in the brain that would be encountered during the wake state. Again, part of that paradoxical paradoxical sleep state. And this flip between the non-REM, 1, 2, 3, 4, up to REM, and that flip-flop between the two is a whole a bunch of circuits within the mid and the hind brain. As I say, you give rise to acetylcholine, and then, of course, muscular paralysis from the neck down.
To find out more about the mechanistic relationship between sleep and mental health, click the link in the show notes to see our slideshow on the website. Sleep draws upon all of the neurotransmitter systems of the brain.
Sleep draws upon all of the neurotransmitter systems of the brain and multiple brain structures. So sleep is a global biological event across the brain. It's hugely important.
If these ideas can be substantiated, sleep would represent a new therapeutic target, both in the prevention of mental illness and its treatment. And there is evidence from a pilot study that cognitive behavior therapy for insomnia can improve the condition of schizophrenic patients with persistent persecutory delusions. This study evaluated the treatment of insomnia in individuals with persecutory delusions to establish whether reducing insomnia will reduce paranoid delusions. In 15 patients who received cognitive behavioral intervention for insomnia, or CBTI, intervention, levels of insomnia and persecutory delusions were significantly reduced post-treatment and at one-month follow-up. Levels of anomalies of experience, anxiety, and depression were also reduced. It was concluded that CBTI can be used to treat insomnia in individuals with persecutory delusions and also lessens the delusions. For more information on this study, see our slideshow on the website by clicking the link in the show notes. More broadly, we should aim to develop strategies that can help patients with schizophrenia consolidate sleep and so help improve their quality of life. In schizophrenia, sleep, timing is irregular and of poor quality. Occurs at any time of day or night. May be too long or too short. is often made difficult by fear and anxiety. And importantly, a change in sleep pattern may precede psychosis. Generating the circadian rhythm. The 50,000 cells of the suprachiasmatic nuclei, or SCN, have a 24-hour cycle. Each single component SCN neuron shows this periodicity. Indeed, every cell in the body is capable of this, telling us that the oscillation is driven by a subcellular molecular process. That said, the SCN, by a signal which we don't yet understand, coordinates all of these rhythms, acting as the conductor of the orchestra, producing a regular temporal beat according to which body cells align their biology. The genes responsible for this 24-hour oscillation have been conserved during evolution to the extent that they are essentially the same in Drosophila, mice, and humans. But there are individual differences in the clock genes between humans who are morning people and those who are not. Melatonin, a biological marker of the dark. The clock is of no use whatsoever unless the internal world reflects the light-dark cycle. Ultimately, it is the eye that sets the molecular oscillation, so that the internal and external world are synchronized. This is achieved not only by rods and cones, but also by light-sensitive retinal ganglion cells. In the absence of eyes, the body still follows a rhythm of activation and sleep, but the cycle is longer than 24 hours. With eyes, our internal clock remains aligned at least approximately to the external world.
This clock is of absolutely no use whatsoever unless the internal world, the internal day, is locked onto the external world, and the external world as defined by the light-dark cycle. And so what happens is that the eye detects the light-dark cycle, that sets that molecular oscillation so that the internal and external worlds coincide. The eye not only projects to the clock, of course, and to the visual structures in the brain, but also other structures in the brain associated with alertness and arousal states. So, for example, if you increase the amount of light, you feel more alert. Now, that just isn't a subjective occurrence. That actually is embedded in your biology because the eye is sending direct projections to alerting structures within the brain that help keep us awake. And finally, there's another loop which is important because the eye, via the master clock, talks to a structure in the middle of the brain called the pineal. The pineal produces melatonin, and it produces melatonin at night. Melatonin is not the sleep hormone, as many people have called it. That is entirely inappropriate. Basically, it's a biological marker of the dark.
The eye projects not only to the master clock of the SCN, but to structures in the brain associated with alertness and arousal. If the amount of light is increased, we feel more alert because the eye is linked directly to brain structures that keep us awake. The eye also projects to the pineal gland, which produces melatonin at night. Melatonin is not, as commonly supposed, the sleep hormone. Basically, it is a biological marker of the dark. The invention of artificial light has allowed us to invade the night to some extent, disturbing natural patterns of sleeping and waking. However, electric lighting, typically 100 to 600 lux, is far less intense than sunlight, 100,000 lux. On the other hand, the fact that we spend much of the daytime indoors means the effect of naturally intense light is much diminished. So features of modern life reduce the strength of light-dark signaling to the internal clock. And this may contribute to everyday problems of sleep disruption, as well as to those evident in people with schizophrenia, whose patterns of life involve less exposure to natural light. See our slideshow on the link between sleep and mental health on our website by clicking the link in the show notes. Preserving slow-wave sleep. Slow-wave sleep, seen in the EEG as periods of low-frequency, high-amplitude activity, seems particularly important biologically, since the proportion of time spent in this phase shows a marked compensatory increase after sleep deprivation. The fact that this phase of sleep is defended probably relates to its importance in the consolidation of memory. One piece of evidence for this is that hippocampal areas that are activated during learning are also active during subsequent slow-wave sleep, or SWS. And the amount of activity during SWS is positively correlated with the improvement in performance during memory retrieval on the following day. So it seems that memory consolidation involves rerunning the hippocampal coding that took place during learning. One adverse effect of sleep deprivation is that brain activation during the performance of cognitive tasks is reduced. But there are also detrimental metabolic effects, with increased release of the appetite-stimulating hormone ghrelin, and adverse cortisol-induced effects on glucose handling and immunity, following sustained activation of the stress axis.
Thank you for listening. Please explore our article and slide libraries, image bank, and visualizing medicine library at institute.progress.im. Sign up for our newsletter and receive relevant articles directly to your inbox at institute.progress.im.